I'm not a morning person, and I'm really happy that so many people are coming here. I'm not a morning person because I'm a nerd. How many nerds are here? Okay, a lot of software developers. Okay, almost 50%. Okay, the good thing. I'm a software developer too, and I'm somehow stuck between worlds, currently between data and journalism, and that's why it's called data journalism. Currently, we're working at Tagesspiegel Data. It's a little bit difficult. We have two labels. One is Tagesspiegel Data for journalism and data science and stories for other companies. So if some company is giving us a lot of data, we want to analyze it and show it to the public, then we have this other label, data science and stories. And to show you what we're actually doing, I just pulled up some websites because we do everything in the web. Here's an organization called Abgeordnetenwatch, and they made a project about the members of parliaments and how much money they earn in different jobs. And you can see there's this long list of names of politicians and the amount of money, and it's absolutely correct, but it's difficult to actually show what's in there if you just show names and amount of money. And there's this big newspaper here, Spiegel, who tried to make a better job, also list, but some bar charts, like the different parties, how much money do they earn, and also from the members of the parliament. But still, it's a complex topic. How can you condense it to a very simple visualization? It's important that, especially if you work in the web, they come to the website and you usually have just 2-3 seconds to convince them to stay there because the whole fucking internet is one click away. So you have to put it somehow in one single data visualization. We did like this. So every bottle is a member of the parliament, and you can see every party, the CDU, Green Party, and the left wing parties. And you can click on them, and the size of the bubbles actually are how much money they earn. And by representing them as bubbles and putting them in such a kind of chart, you also can see how much money a specific party earn. For example, the CDU, the conservatives, definitely earn money, more money than like left wing. And that's the approach we have. We try to find a visualization that tries to combine all the different aspects of the story into one single graphic, and it's quite easy to implement it. But the first thing is you have to actually do it to find a way of visualizing it. Here's something totally different. It's about a conference like this one, and this conference is called Republika, and they also have a Wi-Fi network. And what we did is we asked the company to build the Wi-Fi network to give us their log files, and it's anonymized. So, but still, we know where all the Wi-Fi access points at the conference are and which devices are connected to which access points at which time. And we made this small animation where you can see that all the people are coming in into stage one. Then there's this keynote speech, and everybody loves it. And then everybody goes to smoking and other presentations and stuff like that. And you can scroll through the whole day and also the second day and so on. And you might be interested, what kind of people are these? And you can track them and see that people watching a presentation about whatever data also go to drinking beer or whatever. I'm not sure. We actually did some correlations in there and tried to find out if two presentations share the same audience. So are they actually the same people in there, even if the presentation is 3 days later? But basically, we found out that people are lazy and love to just stay in the room. So it's a good thing to have usually one topic in the room. Do we have more? Of course. Here's a project called Lobby Radar. It's actually, I'm not sure, I can't remember, it's, I think 10,000 people, groups and organizations here in Germany. So we have something like the Deutsche Bundestag, the parliament, and CDU, the Conservative Party, and some smaller companies, and the yellow bubbles are persons, I think, Helmut Schmidt and so on. I can click on them and it's broken. Click on them and nothing happens. Yeah, it's a long story why, but I think I have a screenshot, an older one. It's an older screenshot. We did it with the ZDF. It's the biggest TV station here, one of the big TV stations here in Germany. We made this project, LobbyRadar. The idea was to have a big database and see how all the connections between them. So somebody worked there at a think tank and then moved to the parliament and now he's a journalist and whatsoever. And the funny thing is we published the project with ZDF. And then they found out that actually some journalists at ZDF also worked in some kind of think tanks, and this was a difficult issue. And then some politicians said that, whatever. ZDF loved the project, and then half a year later they dropped it. And now we open source it. We try to put everything on GitHub, so we ourselves can make a copy and. Duplicate and publish it on the website, but it crashes. I'm not sure why. But it was a horrible project because of collecting all the data with different sources. I think I'm not even sure if it's even older than Wikidata. I'm not sure. It's 5 years old. But it's combining data from Facebook, from Twitter, from Xing, official public data and stuff like that. We're trying to combine it, and then actually you should have here. Some kind of a box that shows you the sources and stuff like that. Maybe I can show you something else. Yeah, so these projects were from my company before called Open Data City. And then we moved as a whole team to Tagesspiegel here 2 years ago as data science and stories in Tagesspiegel Data. And one of our first project was this one. It's we found some old map data from Berlin from 1928, so almost 100 years ago, so 90 years ago, and we made a small web tool that's really simple. It's like Google Maps, but the funny thing is that on the left side it's 1928, and on the right side it's 2015. And then you can zoom in and see Bundestag still there. But the Siegessäule, for example, moved here. The Siegessäule is now here. Stuff like that. And you can see which part of Berlin was destroyed during the Second World War. You can see how Spree moved. Like I think here, you can see before and after. Currently, we are at Anhalter Bahnhof. Where is it? Where am I? This is Berlin, yeah. That's okay. And then maybe I should see it from this time. Up. It's Tiergarten. Okay, here. Tiergarten. Da. Tempodrom. So we are currently in this building, and you probably have seen this Liquidrom and. Football court outside, but 90 years ago there was a big train station there, the Anhalter Bahnhof. That's why the train station is called here Anhalter Bahnhof. And if you look outside, you actually see the leftovers from the Bahnhof there. And if you're in the stations down there, they actually show you some photos on how it looked that time. The good thing is when a train station is gone, you have a lot of space for making parks and planting trees and stuff like that. So maybe better than, yeah. And one of the most, I think, exhausting project we did here at Tagesspiegel is Wahlspezial. So it's actually just an usual election web portal. It was on the election in September here in Berlin, in Germany. Mm. And we wanted to make it really hard and really, really complicated. So we made this almost totally automated web portal system. I have a graph out of that. but I can show you later. So here's other results. There's also a nerd view where you can see on how many people are not voting. It's not just parties, also the non-voters. The parliament itself, how does it look like with every member? So now it's updated during the whole election process live. Coalitions. Here we have a map on the results for Berlin. And not just the current results, also you can go back in time and see how Berlin changes. And also, there was also voting about the airport Tegel here in Berlin. The question was, should we leave it open or close it? And the green said, yeah, close it. And the blue said, no, leave it open. And as you can see, that we also added some flight plans of some planes. And obviously, it's quite loud and the people don't like it, so they want to close it down. And most of these graphics of all these visualizations updated automatically, and that was horrible. I can show you a chart here, this one. So on the left is the good part. It's like the front end, the paint of the car, whatever. And the right thing is the engine, and you can see that from so for example, here's. Do I have a pointer? No, sorry. So maybe I take this one. Yeah, sorry, you can't see it. But on the right thing is ZDF TV and ARD TV. Uptippen means that actually somebody said watch TV and typed in the numbers. It was the easiest interface between a TV and the database. of course. We have local voting agencies, and some of them we could write in Scraper, and some of them we still have some people have I think 3 or 4 people who typed all the numbers in from some websites and the TV station, and then we have some civvies, some poll exit polls and stuff like that with Scrapers and Tagesspiegel itself. So whenever there's an article or a tweet from Tagesspiegel, we fetch it and check does it actually have something to do with the election, then we'll publish it. Twitter, Storytile, this is a framework for what's it called, live ticker. Like it's a live ticker tool here in Tagesspiegel. Then we fetched all the data, put it in a database, and so there's another website called Mandatsrechner. He's a guy who becomes a professional on calculating the how the parliament would look like, how many people are in there, and what kind of parties are in there, and stuff like that. So we get all the data, fetch it to the send the this guy. Okay, we have a data update. Then he pulled the data, calculated the new parliament, sent the data back, pulled the webhook on our side, and so we can update our database. And so, in the end, somebody published new data, and in 5 seconds, we know the new parliament and can update every data visualization on our website, even with push notifications. So it's a webhook, it's a WebSocket, so every data visualization is updating automatically. All you have to do is just pull up the website at the beginning of the election or whatever, and then it will update the whole time. And also including a CDN system. This was really great. It was to ensure that when a million of people are opening the website, that the servers won't crash. We have the content delivery network, and the nerd who built it was really, really proud, because in the end, it costed just $13.37. So it's lead 1337. He's a nerd, okay. But I love it. So, but the basic thing is what I'm showing is you, to you is we're making a lot of visualizations and put a lot of effort in there that they look great. And from the technology point of view, we're always trying to, scraping the boundaries and doing something totally new. But to be honest with you, 50, maybe up to 80% of our time we're actually using is cleaning up the data. So you see the project on of the members of parliaments and how much money they earn. is usually we have some data from PDFs or some obscure websites and stuff like that. And cleaning that up and finding is what's in the data actually something that we can actually tell, or does it look like, is it valid and stuff like that. So I think 50 to 80% is just cleaning it up, and that's something that nobody sees. Everybody says, "Oh, it's beautiful! You have a great web designer." No, it's actually most of the work, and that's very important, is something that you can't see. Unfortunately, the guy who builds, for example, this machine, this incredible engine, and also cleans up a lot of data and automatic processes, is not here today, because it would be great to talk, have a talk with him about how he uses Wikidata and what kind of ways he is using other websites and cleaning up and stuff like that. But it's a thing that I see in data journalism for the future, that Wikidata will become more and more important for us if we have a lot of data and trying to find out, like you have an Excel file with country names or other names in there, and put it somewhere in and clean it up and make an automatic map. For example, there's tools like DataWrapper. I'm not sure if somebody knows it, heard about that. It can't make a map, because all you can do is put in a spreadsheet. And if it would have names of countries, it would be hard for DataWrapper to know what is USA or what is Sweden or something like that. But if you combine it with Wikidata, I think it could be very interesting, can generate very interesting tools to clean the data up. So this is somehow a look in under the hood of a nerdy data journalism team. And if you want to have if you have questions, you can ask them right now. Oh, I was so fast again. Sorry.
Hi, my name is Bene. Here.
Left. Right.
My question is, so you publish all these graphics and so on. Do you also publish the raw data, which is cleaned up?
Usually we do that. Sometimes it's not that easy. If it's just a simple raw file, for example, we got a PDF and clean it up, then definitely we publish it as a TSV file. Sometimes as bigger the problem, the projects became, sometimes we don't have actually raw data, we have just a database, but we could provide a database dump, but it will be invalid in the next month or whatever. Currently, we have a lot of data using scraping data from Twitter and stuff like that, and we are not sure if Twitter allows it to publish all the raw data. But in general, I think it's very important to introduce these ideas of open source and open data into journalism, because you want to. If you make interpretations on the data, it would be good that anybody can check if that's okay what you did. So open source and open data is a thing that we try to use.
Yeah, would also be my next question. What about the license of the data? Do you have any issues there? Like reusing data where it's not clear if you're allowed to publish
the license?
Yeah,
the license.
Like if you are allowed to publish it in as an open source license.
Usually we're trying to get down as low as possible. So the best thing would be something like CC0. Because we know when we work with data, it's really horrible. We made this project and we want to publish it in 1 hour. And then somebody said, did we check the sources? Could we use the data? Let's check the licenses. Oh, we have this license and this license. What should we do? And stuff like that. In the end, I think before we were a small company, we said CC BY. It would be a good thing to have great presentations and have your name on that. So as a company, but as a developer, I always prefer CC0. So we try to get this down as low as possible.
What about the other side? Like the one side is the data, but what about the tools? Is there a list of tools that you're frequently using? Did you write your own tools? Did you open source some of them?
So what I will tell you is actually the same thing. You probably have the same issue with most of the tools we're building by our own. So it's usually we use JavaScript, Node.js as glue code. So we have this kind of strange framework and this database. We use Node.js to combine that, like this engine you can see on the right side. And then we try to open source it. And the only reason we have to not open source is because the code is ugly, and you have to write the documentation. And I think this is the most reasons. I think no developer actually has an issue with actually publishing the code, but it's ugly, and you have to write the documentation. So we're trying to make a new approach. We're trying to give a small talk, something like 10 or 15 minutes, just record the slides and then publish it with a YouTube video and said, sorry for the code, but I explain you the architecture or the basic idea behind in 15 minutes and you don't have to write anything. And it's also a nice video. And yeah, but for the election night, we still have, I'm not sure, I think in the GitHub group is something like 20, 30 projects just for the election. So I'm not sure if we open up everything, but we could, it's like dumping it into the internet. It's we should make a documentation, but it's hard work. So we usually find the gems and publish them. Yeah.
Thank you very
much. No? More question?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Thanks for the talk. Do you also publish the provenance of the information that you are visualizing, or provenance of the information, like the history, the data manipulations that you do to the data?
So the method, or
well, not only the method. How exactly have you handled the data in order to come up with this visualization, right? Where is the data coming from?
Yeah.
What have you done to it? Because I guess that the same way that you can highlight one thing more or less, you can also manipulate the data in between. And
yeah.
How can you make sure that the client to which you are showing the data is showing it? I mean, it's
exactly
true.
This is actually a big discussion in data journalism, because data always seems to be so exact and so real, and so you have to trust and believe in that, but you can manipulate it just by using different data visualizations. And one part of the answer is we try to describe it in the text. We have a small method description to show you what was the idea behind it and explain it. And the second thing is we always trying to publish it on Twitter and show it other data journalism, and then we hit each other because said, well, you made it around and whatever. So for example, it's a typical problem when generating maps. Was a big discussion, and it wasn't a big discussion, about visualizing Berlin that way, because usually you have these, if you see it on the front page, usually have Berlin something like that. So you have this map with big regions that have a color. But the problem is that in a lot of these parts of Berlin, nobody lives there because there's a park or a big airport and something like that. So what I did is cutting out every part of Berlin where nobody lives. So it's actually just showing the results, the election results in regions where actually people live. But other people said, well, it is misleading because it looks like that in some parts of Berlin, nobody's voting. Yeah, that's true because nobody lives there, so nobody's voting there. Yeah, that's a good question. For example, there were some maps on Berlin where you see these huge parts of right-wing voters. But if you look there, that's actually just there's just a sea or lake or whatever, or nothing. So I think there's no perfect solution for data visualization at all. I think that's no. There's no perfect solution. So one thing is what we're doing is we have a lot of discussions with other data journalists, and also we have meetings after the election, for example, to get all the data journalists together and show their projects and approaches and have a talk and debate about that. Okay.
Actually, about the visualization about where people in Berlin live and how they voted, I think you found something unique, how to find out where people actually live. And it has something to do with telephone books, right?
Yeah, there's a system behind it. It's called GeoQued. The translation would be geoconversion using telephone book entries. We have a problem on combining data who are aggregated on different levels. So for example, you have these voting districts from 2013 and voting districts from 2017, and they don't fit it because they change during the time. So we need an approach to calculate from one year to another one, or from postal codes to whatever. To voting districts and stuff like that, and in the end we used a hacked telephone book because it was the biggest source of addresses and where people live. So we used this one, and that's also here in Berlin, enhanced with local statistic data, but basically it shows statistical regions. It's called here in Berlin. So like four or five house blocks together, and we decided if you actually show this block or not by checking on how many telephones are there. So whatever. But that was our approach. We want to publish that too because I think it's a very interesting idea and a project. But we have problems because of we use the hacked telephone book. I'm not sure if we can publish that. And also some. Goodbye.
Sorry, we need to come to an end. The others, okay. Because already waiting.
Oh, sorry.
So finish your sentence. Sorry.
I can't remember. It was nice to have you. Yeah,
all right. Thank you very much.